Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, August 6th, 2018. President Kiir, Riek Machar and other opposition parties sign a governance deal in Khartoum.
We South Sudan, we need peace to come here so that at least their thing can change.
And Kiir supporters are jubilant. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan President Salva Kiir, rebel leader Riek Machar, and representatives of other opposition groups signed a power-sharing deal in Khartoum Sunday in the presence of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, and Djibouti President Ismail Omar Guelleh. The deal will see Machar return as first vice president and create four other vice presidents under a transitional government of national unity. The signing sparked massive celebrations in Juba last night, as we hear from Manyang David Mayar for VOA in the South Sudanese capital.
Minutes after President Kiir and Riek Machar signed the deal, Juba residents dashed into the dark street to celebrate. Many ululated and chanted peace slogans. Motorists honked their horns as they drove through the capital with local and pop music by South Sudanese artists blaring from their cars. Juba residents like Kelim and Kau say they hope the deal leads to a change for the better in the lives of more South Sudanese.
We South Sudanese, we need peace to come here so that at least their thing can change. In terms of the Balamai Road construction, even food security, so I'm one of the people who is very happy to enjoy, to come and join this celebration today.
Juba resident Joseph Oshala says he hopes to see the return of a good standard of living which disappeared when the civil war began 5 years ago.
When there was peace last time, people are stable and situation is very fine. There is no economic crisis. And then when the war broke out in 2013, and everything has fallen apart and everything is difficult. Even the life has become very difficult.
But other Juba residents like Deng Achol fear that forces loyal to President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will clash again in the future.
If they are outside, they are friends. But if here in South Sudan, they become enemy. I want to tell them that citizens are tired of you and this is the last hope for you guys. If you come and pay for this peace, then all citizens will rise for the international community to come and rescue us.
Juba resident Susie Anthony thinks everybody, including South Sudan's leaders, are worried of war and ready for peace. She says, in 2016, we didn't get a lot of suffering like the one we have got now in 2018. We have learned that tribalism cannot take us forward. We have learned that corruption cannot take us forward. We have also learned that the war has made all of us to be poor. The warring parties have agreed to continue discussing details on security arrangements and implementation modalities in Khartoum before signing a final peace agreement. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
Thousands of people gathered at Juba International Airport since morning to welcome President Kiir from Khartoum after the power-sharing deal was signed. Waki Simon Mudu was at the airport the moment the president's plane touched down and describes the celebration that unfolded.
The air was filled with ululations and singing among Mr. Kiir's supporters who say they are happy South Sudan will soon be peaceful again. Traditional chiefs, women, youth and government officials all gathered at the airport to welcome the president back home. Many carried banners praising Kiir, describing him as a hero of peace, while others proudly waved the South Sudan flag. Several groups, including the Juruchol community, performed traditional dances at the airport. Many citizens say they welcome the power-sharing deal, but some, like Juba resident Deng Bol, stress that the leaders must implement it effectively.
And now that everyone is given a position, they should use those positions to serve the people of the Republic of South Sudan. And it will be the people of the Republic of South Sudan themselves who will judge who is a good servant of the people. That is number one. The other thing that we want is to make sure that there is unity and common purpose among the leaders of the Republic of South Sudan. If they don't do that, they will have problems with the citizens, because we have seen how people have suffered.
Juba resident Peter Atem agrees.
That peace is good when the South Sudan can accept themselves, but you need to be observed proper, and when they can parliament, maybe it will be good peace. But that peace, you need to be parliament, the two leaders, the warring party, to go together, a brother and brother, to go to talk with the community. Because that tribalism has been planned in people's heart to be removed.
Another Juba resident, Paulino Martin, says his country's leaders must forgive one another and lead the country toward peace and stability.
Our leaders, they have to know that when they agree for the sake of the peace, to bring the end of the crisis of the country, that they know that there are differences, they have to forget about them. And then they have to know that the people of this nation are behind their yearning for peace. And they want peace so that they be free from the country. And all things that are not done from the country, that should be put in place.
For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some analysts in Juba say they are optimistic the signed power-sharing deal in Khartoum will enable South Sudanese citizens to realize some peace and tranquility in their lives and allow them to go about their business without fear of violence. One analyst says the country's leaders must now work towards the welfare and development of South Sudan and learn from their past mistakes. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
University of Juba political science professor James O'Cook says getting all parties to sign the governance agreement with some issues to be dealt with later shows that Sudan also wants to see lasting peace in South Sudan.
The positive thing I see in this agreement is that people are tired of war and the leaders have no exit except to toe the line of peace. And Sudan has taken it personally that it is time for peace to come to South Sudan because the economy of the Sudan is getting into trouble. So it's no longer a joke to Sudan anymore. So these are the positive development, and they have really contributed to the breakthrough that has happened in the governance.
O'Cook says apart from giving certain South Sudanese politicians positions of power in government, the deal also spells out protections for ordinary South Sudanese who need a peaceful environment to take care of themselves and their families.
Politicians now, they have given so many seats in the parliament and in the council of ministers and in the presidency, and they are happy. And the people of South Sudan, they want an environment where they can go about the normal duties every day. And then they plan for their future and for their life. And that's why they are happy and jubilant yesterday, because they are not part of the power sharing, but what they know that a peaceful environment will be created.
Abraham Awalich, a senior policy analyst at the Juba-based Sud Institute, says President Kiir's willingness to work with his main rival, Riek Machar, has given hope to the people that a genuine peace is coming to South Sudan.
The parties are willing to work toward one another, and President Kiir in particular. In the last 2 years, he has been saying that he doesn't want to see Riek Machar or work with him. But now he said he wants to work with him, and he's serious about working with him. And I think Riek Machar also has a similar commitment.
But Awalich said certain governance issues have yet to be resolved.
But as far as the bad governance is concerned, we still have a lot of work to do, which is why I believe even after this agreement, you still have to have an internal dialogue process in the country to bring on board the voices of ordinary citizens who believe that the government itself needs serious reforms.
Awalich says South Sudan should have a central governance system that is not run by a few political elites, but rather gives citizens some power in overseeing the functions of state and local government. He says that can begin with the constitutional making process, which must be done in a transparent way and not through a negotiated peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
East African heads of state gathered in Khartoum to witness the signing of the new deal. Mohamed Yusuf has more on their reaction from Nairobi.
The sides all agreed to end hostilities and to work together in a transitional government scheduled to last for 3 years. Speaking in Khartoum Sunday, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta congratulated the political leaders of South Sudan.
I commend all of you for concluding the discussion on the critical issues of security and governance. These two are critical for peace and stability in South Sudan. We stand with you because today history beckons you to seize the opportunity offered here in Khartoum to marshal your commitment and drive and claim the future of South Sudan as one people.
The agreement returns Riek Machar from exile to the post of first vice president, and four more vice presidents will also be appointed. The document signed by the leader says the president will collaborate, but will have duties and powers in accordance with a 2015 peace deal. The 2015 agreement allows the president to consult with people like Machar, but final decisions rest with Kiir. Kwajie Lasu is a spokesman for the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, which consists of 9 parties. His group also signed the peace deal. He says good governance can save the deal.
It's not even that long as an independent nation, but we've been through a lot and people suffered because of those pillars that are holding the building is very weak. What I mean by that, institutional reforms, justice and accountability, rule of law, giving the people what they deserve in terms of governance, all these components of the government determine the viability of this agreement.
Political observers in the region have questioned the will of Kiir and Machar to work together in peace. The 2015 peace deal collapsed just a year later when a flare-up of violence in Juba left hundreds dead and prompted Machar to flee the country. Commentator Fulbert Namwamba says without adequate security will be difficult for Machar to work.
Machar would like to work with Kiir, but the problem is that the circumstances under which he left Juba is such that there have to be guarantees that he can bring in his army to Juba, and then he has to be within his barracks. Otherwise, he becomes a sitting duck in a country that is unpredictable.
The civil war has uprooted more than 4 million South Sudanese civilians from their homes. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Another analyst says this deal is different because it meets some of the basic expectations that the parties wanted to see. But Brian Adeba, the NUP Project's Deputy Director of Policy, says the deal falls short in one other area.
This deal is not complete. It doesn't solve all the problems that are there, in particular issues about revenue sharing, ambiguous issues about security sector reform and security arrangements in the capital, Juba. These are things that are potentially flashpoints that could unravel the peace agreement, and it behooves the parties in the conflict to actually work very hard to ensure that there are no hiccups that could unravel this peace deal.
We'll have more analysis on the power-sharing deal on tomorrow's show. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. More deaths in the Ebola outbreak in the DRC. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you feel when a foreigner speaks to you in your language?
Well, I feel proud about my language that at least even a foreigner is able to speak it. And I tend to feel funny about it that even a foreigner can speak my language. But I feel good. I feel positive about it.
Oh, when a foreigner speaks to me in my local language, I feel so joyful because this is a person who doesn't know my language. But maybe when she or he did a research about my language, she or he found the interest.
It sounds funny when a foreigner speaks to me in my language. When they speak it well, I get more intrigued and I want to find out how they learn the language.
It sounds funny sometimes.
I laugh and the way the person will speak it, it will not be in a correct way. So I always laugh at that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The World Health Organization says the death toll from the latest outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has jumped to 33, with another 43 confirmed or suspected cases. The dead include two healthcare workers. Officials worry that the virus could spread quickly because three of the confirmed cases are in Beni, a regional trading hub about 70 kilometers from the Ugandan border, with others in neighboring Ituri province. Plans call for vaccinations to begin by Wednesday in hopes that the outbreak can be contained, as was a flare-up 2,500 kilometers away that was declared over just 2 weeks ago. There are extra challenges for such a contagious disease in North Kivu province, where an armed conflict is going on, which complicates efforts to track people who may have been exposed. In addition, more than 1 million displaced people are living there. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa has ruled out forming a coalition government, despite his narrow win in last week's presidential election. The opposition is gearing up to challenge the official results in court. Columbus Mvunga reports from Harare.
In a television broadcast, Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa ruled out forming a coalition government with Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance. The two locked horns in the July 30th presidential election, with Mnangagwa winning a slim victory with 50.8% of the vote, according to official results. Asked by Sky Television whether he would form a coalition government given his narrow victory, the 75-year-old politician pointed out that his ZANU-PF party won firm control of parliament.
In 1964, Harold Wilson of Britain had one seat, beating the Conservative by one seat, and they formed government and ruled England. And I have two-thirds majority, and they are talking about me abandoning my two-thirds majority to seek a government of national unity. Not that it's a bad idea, but it doesn't show that there's any need. I am saying the politics should now take the back seat because the elections are behind us. We should now put our shoulders to the wheel for purposes of modernizing our economy, growing our economy together. Those who have voted against me, those who voted for me, we say Zimbabwe is ours together. Let's move on. The best argument, the best vision, the best ideas have taken the day.
Opposition leader Nelson Chamisa has refused to accept the results given by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and accused it of rigging the July 30th polls for ZANU-PF party. Last week, the opposition protested in Harare. Police used tear gas and live fire to disperse the crowd, killing six people. The co-director of an international observer mission to Zimbabwe's elections, Larry Gepa, called on all parties to refrain from violence.
So we've expressed concerns about the use of excessive force. We think that's inappropriate, and we appreciated the commitment by the president to an independent investigation of the events of last week. We think it's important that there be, you know, accountability for those who are responsible for perhaps using excessive force.
On Monday, Chamisa spokesman Nkululeko Sibanda said the opposition had put together a strong legal team and will approach the court Tuesday to challenge election results. Meanwhile, some protesters who were arrested last week appeared in court Monday. The 27 protesters have been charged with public violence and malicious damage to ZANU-PF property. Attorneys from the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights say the charges should be dropped, arguing the defendants were nowhere near the scene of the alleged crimes. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
More news from Zimbabwe, where observers say one reason for the opposition's loss in the July 30th elections was the split in the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Nelson Chamisa. It was part of an alliance of opposition parties challenging the ruling ZANU-PF party of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. But one opposition group remained outside the coalition, a breakaway faction called MDCT, led by Thokzani Kupe. Some say it was the split which led to Mnangagwa's victory. From Bulawayo, reporter Adi Gondu has more.
Chamisa's MDC alliance was formed by seven political parties last year. Most of its members are splinters from the original Movement for Democratic Change and from each other. In the national total, the MDC alliance won 64 out of 210 seats in parliament, while the MDCT led by Kupe won no seats. The majority of the seats went to the ruling ZANU-PF party of President Mnangagwa. He also won the presidency with nearly 51% of the vote. In comparison, Nelson Chamisa of the MDC alliance won 43%, or nearly 2,150,000 votes. His rival, Thokozani Kupe, won 0.9%, or just over 45,500 of the total votes cast. Malcolm Hlanga is a political analyst with the Leaders for Africa Network. He attributes the win by ZANU-PF, particularly in the opposition's stronghold of Matabeleland, to a well-run campaign and to popular policies. He says, for example, that many rural voters were swayed by a two-year-old program of support called Command Agriculture, and also by an effort by the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission to look into the political killings of tens of thousands of people in Matabeleland shortly after independence.
Collecting everything, Kupe was insignificant in the Matland election. With or without your votes, the winning patterns remain the same. I sincerely believe that Matabeleland bought into a reformed ZANU, which has a bargaining power in parliament after 17 years of MDC's failure as their representative. Look at Command Fisheries, Livestock, and the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission. They became sellable for ZANU in Matabeleland, hence a ZANU penetration and an MDC demise. In very rare instances, did you find split votes, which ultimately would not have a huge bearing on parliamentary seat distribution? What we saw in the election is a good marketing of Nelson as a person by MDC, but a failure to sell their party. The shift in presidential preference in ZANU strongholds show how Nelson was a preferred brand of a president, even to ZANU members. I think that is an interesting exhibition of democracy.
The elections were significant for the inroads both parties made into each other's strongholds. ZANU-PF did well in the opposition stronghold of Matabeleland South. Some attribute the loss to dual fielding of candidates of both MDCT and MDC Alliance in some of the region's districts, such as Nkai South and Nkai West. ZANU-PF profited from the confusion as a result. On the other hand, the MDC's presidential candidate, Nelson Chamisa, did well in the rural stronghold of ZANU-PF, Mashonaland West Province. He carried 216,441 votes compared to Mnangagwa's 313,648 votes. The win represents a positive shift for the opposition. For political analyst Thomas Tole, the ruling party's victory was not just a result of a well-managed campaign, but also of a geographic divide between Zimbabwe's voters.
The sad thing really is that we have three quarters of the Zimbabwean population residing in rural areas. And if the ruling party is to dominate that space, it means that Zimbabwe is going to be stuck with the ruling party for quite a long while. And this is sad, really, for our democratization agenda and project.
Observers say that what is clear from this election outcome is that the opposition will have to do more to expand their popularity beyond its urban base if it's ever to gain national power. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. South Sudan President Salva Kiir, rebel leader Riek Machar, and other opposition group leaders signed a power-sharing deal in Khartoum yesterday as the leaders of Uganda, Kenya, and Sudan looked on, among others. The deal will see Machar return as first vice president and create four other vice presidents under a transitional government of national unity. Minutes after President Kiir and Machar signed that deal, Juba residents dashed out into the streets and celebrated. Many ululated and chanted peace slogans. Motorists honked their horns while driving through the capital with pop and traditional music blaring from their cars. Juba residents, such as Clement Cao, say they hope the deal leads to a change for the better in the lives of most ordinary South Sudanese. Cao said, "We South Sudanese need peace to come here so that at least things can change in terms of development, road construction, and food security." Thousands of people gathered at Juba International Airport since this morning to welcome President Kiir from Khartoum after the deal was signed. The air was filled with those ululations and singing among Mr. Kiir's supporters, who say they're happy South Sudan will soon be peaceful again. Traditional chiefs, women, youth, and government officials all gathered at the airport to welcome the president back home. Several groups, including the Jurchul community, performed traditional dances at the airport. Many citizens say they embrace the deal, but some stress that the leaders must implement it effectively. Some analysts in Juba say they're optimistic the signed power-sharing deal will enable citizens to realize a little bit of peace and tranquility in their lives finally. One analyst says the country's leaders must now work towards the welfare and development of the country. University of Juba political science professor James Akook says getting all the parties to sign the governance agreement, with some issues to still be dealt with later on, shows that Sudan also wants to see lasting peace in South Sudan. Akook says apart from giving certain South Sudanese politicians positions of power in government, the deal also spells out protections for ordinary South Sudanese who need a peaceful environment to take care of themselves and their families. And finally, there is a World Health Organization says the death toll from the latest outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has jumped to 33, with another 43 confirmed or suspected cases. The deaths include two healthcare workers. Officials worry that the virus could spread quickly because three of the confirmed cases are in Beni, a regional trading hub, about 70 kilometers from the Ugandan border, with others neighboring Ituri province. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Maisha ni Matumu, or Life is Sweet, by Samba Mapangala and Orchestra Virunga. We've been listening to Samba Mapangala and Orchestra Biringu with the song Maisha Ni Matumu. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Come on.